All right, welcome back to the Listener's Commentary on the Gospel of Matthew. The Listener's Commentary is made possible by the generous support of tons of people just like you. So if you're one of those who generously supports this ministry, thanks a ton for your support. If you've been blessed or impacted by the Listener's Commentary in any way, would you prayerfully consider joining the team of supporters so that this ministry can continue to grow, reach new people, impact others, so that we can continue to build out the study hub and some of the additional resources there? The easiest way to do that is to swing on over to listenerscommentary.com, click the Give button, and it'll redirect you to a page through World Family Mission where you can set up a one-time or a recurring monthly donation. So you put in a dollar amount. If you want to make it monthly, you click a little box that says make this monthly. All those donations will go through World Family Mission and then be funneled to me and to this ministry as well. So thanks a ton in advance for your support. In this recording, we are looking at Matthew chapter 15, verses 1 through 20. And Jesus just finished feeding the 5,000. That was the preceding story in their recording just before this one. And at the culmination of that story, Matthew highlights Jesus as the Son of God. He wants us to hear that this is the whole sort of theme of the feeding of the 5,000 and the walking on water and all of that, that truly, you are the Son of God. And then at the end of all of that, Matthew gives a concluding summary statement that really ended the last section and transitions to the section we're in here. That concluding statement sounded like this. Matthew 14, 34 through 36 reads, "When they had crossed over," that is, crossed over the Sea of Galilee, "they came to land at Gennesaret." Gennesaret was a large plain outside of Capernaum on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. "And when the men of that place recognized him, they sent word into all the surrounding region," to all the little towns and farms and all of that around them, into the surrounding region, "and brought to him all who were sick. And they pleaded with him that he might touch the border of his cloak, and all who touched it were cured." We talked about the whole idea of the border of the cloak and healing in his wings in our last recording. You can check that out there. But geographically, that little concluding statement at the end of Matthew 14 is important because that's where we pick up here in Matthew 15. We pick up at that point with Jesus in the region of Gennesaret. And you also need to keep in mind the larger context as well. As you're reading through Matthew 14 through 16:20, what holds all of those various little snapshots together is this. You have all different kinds of people demonstrating all different kinds of responses to Jesus. And it's that theme that Matthew has used to kind of put together this little photo collage from the life of Jesus that we're looking at in Matthew chapter 14, 15, and 16. So here in 15, 1 through 20, we now meet some Pharisees and some scribes from down south in Jerusalem. Here's the way the story unfolds. "Then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem." So Jesus is up north in Galilee, in the region of Capernaum and Gennesaret and all of that. He's up there. These Pharisees come from down south, and they're probably coming on an official, you know, investigation trip. We've heard reports Jesus has spent some time in Jerusalem, although it's not much recorded in Matthew's gospel. So now they've come and they want to investigate. They want to see for themselves. They want to hear, and they want to be able to take a report back to the leaders in Jerusalem about this upstart rabbi who's been stirring up all sorts of issues and controversy wherever he goes. So they come from Jerusalem and they said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread." And so they have been observing Jesus, and as they're investigating him, they see a problem, and the problem is specifically with the tradition of the elders. That is the tradition of the various teachers or the various rabbis that have wrestled with what's the best way to keep the Torah. And so over the previous century or so, Jewish experts in the law have wrestled with these kinds of things. And if you haven't listened to the background to the Gospels, where we give an introduction to the various players that show up in the Gospels, like the Pharisees, it would actually be worth doing that. But here, let me just note that the goal of these kinds of traditions that they're referring to was, in their language, to build a fence around the law. What they meant by that was, let's put up some suggested applications that kind of protect the commandments so that we won't break them. Like, how do you keep these commandments in such a way in our culture that we don't break them? That's the idea. We're going to build this fence. If you don't violate these traditions, you certainly won't violate the commands. And these are the kinds of traditions that were later collected and recorded in what's called the Mishnah. And the particular tradition they're talking about here has to do with ritual cleanness when eating. And so it's not merely like your mom saying, "Did you wash your hands?" It's way more serious than that. The Pharisees actually sought to maintain the same state of ritual purity in their homes and in their mealtimes that priests were required to maintain in the temple. And so serving in the temple, the priests went through a ritual washing. And the Pharisees, therefore, were like, well, then let's have a ritual washing before eating. And so washing your hands and making sure you were ritually clean before eating, well, let's do that, and we will honor God in that way. And our mealtimes will be just as pure as like the priests in the temple. And the rationale behind that is, well, like, what if even unintentionally or unknowingly you've contacted somebody or something that was ritually unclean? Let's take care of that and we'll wash our hands. So that's what they're getting at here when they come and they say, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? Why do they not wash their hands when they eat bread? And Jesus answers in verse 3 and said to them, why do you yourselves break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? Jesus responds to their question with a question of his own. And that was actually a very common form of dialogue and discussion between rabbis. So it's not like Jesus is just kind of being challenging. This is often the way these kinds of discussions went. How do we keep the law? What is the law actually teaching? What's the best way to do it? And you would have kind of dialogue that sometimes involved a question responded to with a question as people thought it through. And Jesus' question is very direct, and it is very challenging. In some ways, it ups the ante by saying, in essence, look, you're challenging my disciples on the tradition of the elders, but what about you all breaking God's word because of your traditions? That's what he's getting at. And then Jesus gives an example in verse 4. He says, for God said, here's the example, honor your father and mother, and the one who speaks evil of father and mother is to be put to death. The goal of the Pharisees, remember, was to build this fence around the law. And so it may have started out with this, how can we make sure we keep the law as well as possible? But Jesus doesn't think it's working. In fact, Jesus sees places where their traditions actually have the opposite effect, where their traditions keep them from obeying God's law. And he gives an example here in verse 4 that has to do with honoring your parents. These are clear, explicit commands in the Hebrew Scriptures. The first, honor your father and mother, well, that's from the Ten Commandments. That's commandment number 5. It was actually one of the highest social values of the day throughout the whole Middle East. The second one he quotes here is from Exodus 21, and it shows the severity of dishonoring your father and mother. If you do that, then you need to be put to death, the Old Testament law said. Well, both of these instructions are clear commands from God's law. They're obvious commandments. But Jesus sees that they have a tradition that's actually keeping them from doing that, from honoring their parents. Here's what he says. Look at verse 5. But you say, now he's going to go on to their tradition. So we've got explicit commands in verse 4. Well, here's your tradition. Whoever says to his father and mother, whatever I have that would help you has been given to God, he is not to honor his father and mother anymore. And by this, you have invalidated the word of God for the sake of your tradition. Jesus is referring to a particular tradition called Korban. It actually shows up here. The Hebrew word refers to offer up, given to God, or offered up to God. It's actually the word for the sacrifices used in Leviticus 1 through 7. It means offering. And the Korban tradition that Jesus is referring to in verses 5 and 6 was this tradition of saying, all my goods now have been dedicated to God, therefore they're not available to help take care of you, my aging parents, in your hour of need. And so Jesus' point is, you have this tradition where you can offer up all your physical goods to God, and then that frees you from actually this crucial obligation of taking care of your parents, which was one of the most important ways of honoring your parents. And Jesus is saying, so your tradition keeps you from obeying the very commandment of God to honor your parents by providing for them and caring for them in their old age. Then what Jesus does in verse 7 and following is he quotes a passage from the prophet Isaiah and applies it to them. The passage goes like this, verse 7 through 9. You hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy about you by saying, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. And in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Notice how Jesus begins right before he quotes from Isaiah. He calls them the hypocrites. That word originally referred to an actor in a play. He plays a role. He puts on a mask. And so eventually it came to be used for a pretender, someone who appeared to be something that he actually wasn't. And then he quotes from Isaiah, Isaiah 29, verse 13. And he makes two points. That's what this quote says, that these people are full of lip service, but their heart is far away from me. They talk religious talk. They talk as if they're spiritual. They talk as if God is important to them, but their heart is far away from him. And Jesus will actually come back to the importance of the heart as he explains all of this to his disciples privately down below towards the end of this section. The other point that the Isaiah quote makes is that they teach as commandments or doctrines, as if they were teachings from God, the commandments of men. And so Jesus' point is, what was true of some of the people in Isaiah's day is also true of them in his day. They're just like that. And all the people looking back knew the problems of the Jews in Isaiah's day, so this would be a stinging indictment upon them. After he said that to the Pharisees and scribes, we can imagine them probably leaving, and then Jesus called the crowd to himself and said to them, hear and understand, it's not what enters the mouth that defiles the person, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles the person. Remember, this whole section started with the Pharisees and scribes asking Jesus, why do his disciples not eat with clean hands? Why do they not wash their hands before they eat? And they're afraid of being defiled, becoming ritually unclean. That's the idea here. So Jesus is telling the crowds, look, it's not what you put into your mouth actually that makes you unclean. It's what comes out of your mouth. That's far more important. The things you talk about and the things you say, that's way more toxic and defiling than the things you eat. Now, in Mark's version of this, in his gospel, he has a little parenthetical note that Mark himself threw in there, where he says, in this way, Jesus declared all foods clean. Matthew doesn't include that. He's writing to Jews. It's not as critical. So he doesn't include that little note, but that's the implication of what Jesus is saying here, that food really isn't the thing that defiles you. It's what comes out of your mouth, out from inside of you, that really defiles you. Then, after Jesus said that to the crowd, the disciples came to him, verse 12, and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? So when Jesus gave this quote from Isaiah, maybe they overheard what he said to the crowd, they were offended by this. And Jesus answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant will be uprooted. So he's using this imagery. And basically what he's saying is that the religious leaders, these particular ones from Jerusalem, they weren't planted by God the Father, that they're not a plant that God himself planted, and therefore they're going to be uprooted. Then Jesus says in verse 14, leave them alone. They are blind guides of blind people. And if a person who is blind guides another person who is blind, both will fall into a pit. Notice what Jesus has just said about these particular religious leaders or other ones like this. He calls them blind guides who are leading blind people, and they're leading them right into a pit. Interestingly enough, the word pit in the Old Testament, Sheol, is the word, one of the words for pit. You're leading them to Sheol. You're leading them into a pit. They're going to fall down to their own demise and their own destruction because of their blindness. Then in verse 15, Peter asked, explain the parable to us. That is, explain, presumably, the parable about eating food and defiling a person and all that. That seems to be what he has in mind because of how Jesus answers. And so Jesus said to him in verse 16, are you also still lacking in understanding? Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated. Therefore, we see that he's talking about specifically the whole idea of what goes into your mouth not defiling you. Peter's confused about that. He's like, help me out. And we can understand, if we put ourselves in Peter's shoes, why that might be the case. His whole social history, his whole family upbringing, his whole culture, for generation upon generation upon generation, they've had this mindset of there's clean foods and there's unclean foods. There's things you eat that make you unclean. There's customs and traditions about what you can eat out of and what you can't eat out of. And so food and cleanness were very well associated to each other, and he's confused by this. And so Jesus is challenging them on this, and what he's really saying in essence by means of this question is, ritual purity concerning food is not nearly as important as purity of the heart. Why is that? Well, as he says here, because it goes into the mouth, into the stomach, and then out into the toilet. It doesn't enter the heart, and the heart is the thing that really matters. So Jesus goes on and says in verse 18, but the things that come out of the mouth, what he already said, that's what defiles you. He said that up above. The things that come out of the mouth, they come from the heart, and those things defile the person. And in the biblical worldview, the way the language is used, the heart is not the seat of emotions, as it typically is in modern English language. The heart, in biblical language, is more like the control center of the person. It overlaps significantly with what we call the will. And so it refers to really that thing within that controls you, and that's the key to true defilement. Then Jesus goes on and gives a list of examples. He says, for out of the heart, out of this control center of the person, out of there come evil thoughts, murders, acts of adultery, other immoral sexual acts, thefts, false testimonies, and slanderous statements. These are the things, Jesus says, that defile the person. But to eat with unwashed hands, that doesn't defile the person. Notice what Jesus says. All these things come out of the heart, out of more like the seat of your character, out of your will. And so it's heart cleansing that really matters. And so what we see implied here, made explicit in the parenthetical note in Mark that I mentioned above, and then in the rest of the New Testament, what we see is that now that the Messiah has come, now that Messiah Jesus has come and inaugurated his new covenant, that what really matters is heart cleansing. The true issue of clean and unclean refers to the cleanness of heart way more than the object lesson that was involved in cleanness with food. True defilement comes from within, not from without. Ritual activity and ritual purity was never intended to be the primary concern. It was never intended to be the main kind of purity. It was actually to be instructive of the importance of true purity, which referred to purity of the heart. You actually see the same sort of thing in the Old Testament prophets. We actually saw it up above with the quote from Isaiah. The Old Testament prophets frequently challenge Israel about offering sacrifices and thinking that somehow that's sufficient, even though they're greedy or selfish or oppressing people. They participate in worship and practice injustice, and the prophets are like, no, that's not right. And so from the Old Testament prophets clear through to Jesus, ritual purity means very little without heart purity. And so religious activity and religious habits aren't bad. It's just that they mean very little if your heart is unclean, if your heart is far from God. And that's really crucial to what Jesus is getting at in this section. And so as we wrap up this section, let me just offer a couple reflections on all of that. Obviously, the main reflection is what we just talked about, that the really central thing is having a pure heart. If you want to be a pure person, you have to have a pure heart. All the clean and unclean laws of the Old Testament were supposed to teach Israel of the seriousness of approaching God, who lived among them and was supposed to lead to having a clean heart that was like, I want to honor God from the inside out. Jesus is now driving that point home. And as Mark explains in his account of this whole nature of clean and unclean, well, it now changes with the new covenant. Clean and unclean is now defined by what comes out of the heart, not what goes into the mouth. The second reflection I want to draw our attention to is that we should note how this issue started in this whole discussion in this episode. It started with a tradition, and it really illustrates how prone people are to create traditions that give the impression of holiness, but not always the reality. Whether it's then in Jesus' day or still today, religious people can come up with holy-looking or religious-sounding, pious-sounding traditions, but they don't actually change the heart. But holiness of heart is the reality that Jesus come to bring into reality, bring into effect. And so we want to make sure that whatever traditions we have or whatever rituals we practice, that they're all aimed at changing and refining and cleaning our heart so that our heart leans in and draws near to God.